The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
We all have many mothers, not just one. We all mother the world, parent in some way, nurture other lives in their unfolding. And there are many things that mothers are bad at, as the book we read, The Kids, humorously pointed out, including all the things they were purposely bad at so we could feel powerful and competent. But with any luck, they were good at loving us, good enough that we knew we had a starting point on knowing what love might look like when we tried to do it ourselves, knew we were loved and lovable. And it's also true that no one instructs us in this work or licenses us in life. We learn as we go, deepening, I hope, looking always to get better with each opportunity life throws our way that can help us to do so, about what it means to love one another. And I was reminded recently of some of what it can mean to nurture and love well in a book and its stories. Our Unitarian Universalist Association, our denomination, has an annual common read, a book it asks us all to dive into and read together. Each year, I approach it like it's unseasoned vegetables, and each year, I am pleasantly surprised by how wonderful it is. This year is no exception. The book was Authentic Selves. It's a series of interviews of trans and non-binary people and their families and friends by Peggy Gillespie. We are reading it as the Minister's Book Group book this month, so that group meets on May 21st by Zoom at 6:30 in the evening, so you still have time to get the book and join us to discuss it, and I encourage you to do so. Again, what I thought would be good for me has turned out to be just a joy. Gillespie's interviews are of all these people who are trying to bring their full and beautiful humanity to life and into the world. The stories are full of brilliant insights and big-hearted observations and are this blessing to witness and to learn from. And they also had an enormous amount to say to our topic today of what it looks like practically to live a life that holds open possibilities for one another. It has always been the case that parents imagined a future for their children. In fact, parents who think that the world cannot hold a positive future for their children often use that very reason to justify choosing not to have children. Moreover, it is what we imagine for our kids that compels parents to live, to work, and provide, to engineer the life that they hoped for and imagined as far as humanly possible. Parents who didn't get an education, dream of, and then work to give their kids one. Parents who lived under the threat of an oppressive government imagine and often go through great difficulty, as we see, to find a way, if they can, to raise their children in countries free from oppression. Parents who were not parented well themselves imagine and then work to break patterns of the past and set new ones as they step into the role of nurturing the lives given into their care. We human beings, heroic things to hand on a better world to the children, often because we imagine what the world will look like if we do not get heroic. Imagination is key to parenting, central to great parenting. It always has been. And there is always an and. and. It is also true that what we imagine and envision for our children can also sometimes be the biggest stumbling block to good parenting, and a huge source of grief sometimes. Perfect examples of this sort of parental watershed struggle grounded in imagination come up again and again in the interviews Peggy Gillespie shares in her book. In Authentic Selves, the stories, or series of stories, always begin with the first-hand telling of their own life by the person who is trans or non-binary. Often, it's a story of their growing up, of how and when they knew that things felt different for them than the story of their same-sex peers or siblings. Every story is different. Every journey is different. Every place people land up in their own finding of a way through it and defining of themselves is different. And always, though, always it takes a lot of struggle and imagination against what they see in the world and find in the world that meets them. To begin with, living a life that's authentic for trans and non-binary folks takes owning that reimagining of their lives. And part of that means a lot of hard letting go and the invitation of others to do the same, of what has been. The greatest barrier to my own self-acceptance, one of the people interviewed said, Ben McLaughlin, was the daunting prospect of dismantling the old, inauthentic me. That's often the biggest shock and the hardest work for families of folks who are finding their way to a more authentic life. For the person coming out, usually it's been something that they've been engaging in a conversation and a process around for years, even decades. But for the family hearing the news, as many of you know, it's often unexpected. Certainly, that's more true still for trans and non-binary folks, in part because we've kept them invisible in the world. It's not part of the spectrum of options many parents imagine. We hope someday they will. Sarah McBride is one of the people who's interviewed in the book. Do you know Sarah McBride? Anybody in the Sarah McBride fan club? Oh my gosh, I'm in love with Sarah McBride. Sarah is the senator from Delaware, who, if you haven't followed her story as she's entered Washington recently, is so wise and measured and gorgeous in her observations. She'll give you faith in the future of the world if you can't find it anywhere else. Anyway, to draw into our sort of presence some of what it means to face the letting go process, Sarah's mother recounts that she, Sarah's mother, literally fell on the floor when Sarah told her that she was trans. Another parent, a woman who was lesbian, so should have maybe thought more and been more open and exposed to the range of possibilities of a life, went into the bathroom and locked herself in for a long time, crying. Another parent told her 16-year-old that the child needed to get back in the closet, which the child did. For all of the people, the surprise and grief was in part that this vision of their child's life was going to be different from how they imagined it. And they had gotten attached to their vision of this child's life, as we do get attached to our visions. It's the danger of our imaginations, the flip side of the gift to parenting that imagination can be. Grief, then, is this natural emotion in such moments. Grief at what was familiar, For the trans person, too, a loss of what was familiar, comfortable, even in all the ways it pinched. Grief at the struggles for parents that their children will have. Grief at a future you have not yet imagined, perhaps cannot yet imagine. To be honest, all parenting involves such moments. All growing up involves such moments, doesn't it? I remember a friend who was getting ready to have a kid, which he desperately wanted, but right before his daughter was born, experiencing some intense grief, and he went out for a drink with a friend, and he was talking to the friend about his grief. And James said to this friend to describe it, "I mean, think about it, man. I won't be able to go out late at night and stay out all night." His friend nodded sympathetically and then said, "James, you haven't gone out with us for years." Real and imagined losses, right, become present. Life and the realities of the trade-off that is always life. Choosing one way means letting go of the other options, always. So grief is real in any moments of transition and grief, and no less so, maybe more so when a child comes out or begins to imagine life more fully and who they are in ways that we're not familiar with. And grief, we need to remind ourselves in such times in our own lives, is always hard, but it's always what prepares us, clears out the room to accept what is just emerging, the unfolding future that we are making room for with the letting go. In such moments, you can hear in people's stories this temptation to go back to that vision of parenting that wants us to use what control we have or fear that we have for our loved one as reason to repress and try to make the thing go away that we do not understand, or that we think will make our child more vulnerable, as it will. But what the parents I fell in love with in Gillespie's stories reminded me of is the beauty of the decision to be in this life as their kids lived it. I loved that Sarah McBride's father, when he heard her news, had no idea what trans meant. And his wife said in her recounting of their experience that immediately after Sarah left the room, her husband ran to the computer and Googled it. And then how her parents, with help from friends, made an appointment with a transgender adolescent psychiatrist who did a full intake of the whole family. And then who said, "Yes, your daughter is transgender and she will be able to realize her dreams." And how, when their older son, who was a med student, said he wasn't worried about Sarah, but he was worried about them, how her parents went and got themselves into therapy. The best of these parents, in the best moments, modeled how we do what we can to be the nurturer for the person, children, whoever's in our life, when they reveal themselves to be who they think they are becoming, and we reimagine life for them, with them. Ideally, all of us do this for and with all the people we love, always, whenever they need us to, that we're on each other's teams. Even if we don't know what it means yet, we learn as fast as we can to be with them and how to be with them. So yes, sometimes we'll grieve first. I felt, Sarah McBride's mother wrote, like all of Sarah's hopes and dreams and my hopes and dreams for her were shattered. But what she and they figured out was that this wasn't the case at all, that their daughter was liberated to so much more than any of them had imagined or could have imagined. And all of this puts imagining right back where it belongs in our lives of love. right in the hands of the person living it. I think about it sometimes when parents try to micromanage their children's lives, or we try and manage someone else's life. I think about the means, the need to recenter ourselves, to remind ourselves, I have had a life to define, and I am still defining it. And we, you, all of you get to define yours, and we get to continue to figure out what that means. And we get to figure out what the divine creative force in the universe planted in each of us, asked us to water and nurture so it could bloom into the world. And that is a lifetime of very reflective, deep practice that it asks us to do, and always be present to how that's unfolding, to what's sprouting, to what's yearning to be watered and led into the sun to bloom in our heart and our spirit and our bodies. And our job is not to worry about someone else's discernment about their lives, to be with them in it, but not to manage it for them, to think we know. And ultimately, the result, if we're all doing this work deeply and cheering each other along and nurturing one another, the world comes to life in the ways it's meant to. And we learn what gets us through these moments of reimagining and grieving and discovering and being together in it all. One thing that seemed to be important in the transition from old to new visions in these families that I'll share with you all is the presence of grace. Inevitably, Sarah McBride said, there were going to be moments when we weren't patient, moments where either my parents or I said something a little harsh. We recognized that we were all bringing a lot of fear and feeling to our conversations. But even when we lost our temper or got upset, we knew we had to continue to extend grace to one another. And Bedara Hassan said of her journey with her identical sister, now brother Ben, that what she learned, as she learned in her own journey of being diagnosed with lupus, was that love and support was the most important thing anybody can have. So grace and love in abundance. And leaning in toward one another again and again. And what's the blessing of it? Ben and Bedara's mother, from a conservative Muslim family, the mother who had forced her 16-year-old back into the closet when he tried to come out, 6 months after her now son's transition, said that she could see what she couldn't see before. When you were growing up, she said, you were always so miserable. You never smiled in photos. You'd cry almost every day. And now, you're happy. You have so much to live for, and you have so much passion in you. Ben said of his mom, she said she was sorry for what she put me through when I first came out. And my mom almost never apologizes for anything. You and I, we're not meant to be perfect. We just have to learn how to love. And there are so many things moms can't do at the beginning, but moms can learn. And being human on the best of days is a challenge. But may we realize where our imaginings for another's life must end and our own be allowed to take root. When we find ourselves in those places where we have to let go and prepare for a new vision of one another, may we allow space for grief and grace, learn as fast as we can, offer all the love and companionship that we can find a way to offer. And may we be blessed in this central work of mothering the world and the part that's given into our hands. In this gorgeous imperfect, courageous call to love one another into being. Amen.
My mother put up with a lot of flack from my dad. I don't want to stand up here and run him down, so. But he did turn out to be bipolar, and that made life difficult for my mother, so that they ended a 41 years of marriage in divorce. Through all of this, my mom was still a woman of faith and love, and she took up her new single life in bold fashion. She learned to drive. My father had always been the chauffeur. She got employment at a ski shop and then JCPenney's. She basically reimagined herself through a transformation and was eventually pretty happy in her apartment with her little cat, Sophie. Mom collected figurines of turtles. When we lost her at 89, 4 years ago, to pneumonia, the collection was distributed at her memorial service. Anyone could take a turtle and thereby still have a reminder of Ann Adams. Ask me anytime and I'll point out the little brass turtle I have on my hat. She loved to read, especially crime novels. She loved her fractious cat, Sophie, who was not as big a fan of my dog, Nugget, as Mom was. She loved her church, Bethany Church, a United Church of Christ in Montpelier, Vermont. She loved her TV shows and morning coffee and paper. She basically loved all people, often proving it by baking a special cherry nut bread for friends, neighbors, and fellow parishioners. Ann Adams was a very sweet, kind, and lovely woman. She supported my choice of becoming a professional clown, so much so that she actually made my clown outfits for me. Poindexter the clown had great costumes, thanks to Mom. I loved when some person would yell out, "Hey, your mother dresses you funny." And I'd yell back, "Yeah, but how the heck did you know that?" My mother always had a hankering for me to become a preacher of some kind. I feel so blessed that she got to see our live stream services, and I guess seeing her number two son as a worship associate was fulfillment of her desire for me there. But I really wanted to say that she helped me so much more than just by birthing me. She was my imagination guru of sorts, since I was very scared of lots of imaginary things, monsters, etc., when I was little. She would always assure me that it was just my imagination, nothing real under the bed or in the closet there. My mother inadvertently launched my acting career by allowing me to be in a college musical theater production of Anything Goes at 6.5 years old. It is set aboard a cruise ship, which at my age at that time, I expected to be a real ship. Seems they needed a bratty kid, troublemaker, who carried a wooden sword around and imagines himself to be a soldier. My older brother was supposed to play the part, but David got the chicken pox, so send in Dennis the Menace. My mom, more than my director, gave me pointers on using my imagination to build my kid's character. She kind of introduced me to method acting. Or was it just typecasting? Then came the laughter and applause, and I was hooked. I lost my mother in 2021, but I often have the feeling that my mom is kind of hovering over me and sort of touching base with me, hopefully being proud. If my mother was here today, I think she would want me to share this with you. It is a list that her church put out on a t-shirt. This is the one she gave me. It says, "We pray, sing, dance, laugh, cry, comfort, seek peace, do justice, love creation, and listen, because God is still speaking. Mm-hmm.